This is a Hat Trick podcast.
Oh, lovely.
Do you remember your sex education? Was it helpful to you? Was it filled with scientific information rather than real, practical advice? I'm Diggory Waite, and this is The Real Sex Education. Every other week, I'll be posing sex questions, busting sex myths, and opening up our mailbox to answer your relationship conundrums. But in order to do this, I need an expert. A sexpert, if you will. But the only sex and relationship therapist I know is my mum. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Hello, and welcome to The Real Sex Education. I'm Diggory Waite, and I'm joined, as ever, by accredited sex and relationship therapist, Kate Campbell. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Mum, we went on a school trip, didn't school we?
We went to the pictures.
We went to the pictures, to the cinema. Real Sex Education on tour. It was our first school trip. We heard about a new film, Good Luck to You, Leo Grand, in which Emma Thompson plays a retired widow who hires a young sex worker to give her first ever orgasm. It's not the usual film you'd imagine a mum and son to go to.
There was no one else in the cinema, so
exactly.
So we were able to spread out, relax.
Yeah, have a good time.
Have a good time.
Well, it was a very special outing, and as such, I thought I'd record a little something of us before we watch the film. Would you like to hear it, Mum? Are you sure you want people to hear this back?
Play it, let me see.
All right. You can hear that banging sound. That is Mum playing on her chair. Mum. You need to seriously chill. You need to stop that. Okay. We're currently at the cinema. As you can probably stop that. As you can tell, we've got the entire place to ourselves to come and watch this film. Are you excited?
Oh, yeah.
Good. I mean, you sound very excited. Mama's had two massive bags of pick and mix. And you had to go to the toilet to throw up, didn't you? Because you had too many sweets. Yeah.
I have had no sweets at all. Being
or definitely no sleep, yeah. I know you're about to say that. That was a Freudian slip there.
No sweets.
Oh, here we go. It's starting. Shut up, everyone. Wonderful. Wonderful stuff. So sometimes I feel like the roles reverse between the two of us. I don't know if you get that impression sometimes as well.
I don't know what you mean.
No, of course. So that was before the film. And before the film, before we even watched the film, we knew that there was quite a big conversation going on after we watched it about something called the orgasm gap and women who can't orgasm, don't orgasm, that sort of thing. So before we talk about the film in any more detail, Mum, can you tell me what the orgasm gap is?
Yeah, well, the orgasm gap is the difference between how often men orgasm during penis and vagina sex and how often women orgasm during penis and vagina sex. And there is a big discrepancy. So vaginas are really, really good at giving men orgasms, and vaginas are very, very bad at giving women orgasms, because very few women orgasm just through intercourse.
Well, funny you should say that, because I have got an article which I will link to in the show notes, which says, according to this research, of 52,000 participants, only 35% of heterosexual women always or usually orgasm during vaginal sex alone. 35%.
Yeah. And I don't think it's as high as that, to be honest, because I think there's a bit of a belief that you should be able to. And one of the reasons that there is this belief that you should be able, there are two main reasons. One is Sigmund Freud, the psychoanalyst, said that clitoral orgasms were immature. And he said that vaginal orgasms were what you should be aiming for, and that women who could only have clitoral orgasms, there was something wrong with them, and that orgasm through intercourse was the way to go, and that was a proper mature orgasm. I mean, it's such a ludicrous idea, because a cum is a cum, you know.
We'll clip that bit.
But Freud, who is a little bit sex obsessed anyway, just had this really, really strange idea. And it was disproved, of course, because research very swiftly showed, when research was done, that actually clitoral stimulation is necessary for an orgasm in women. Of most, one way or another it is. And sometimes the women that have orgasms during intercourse have a highly developed clitoral complex. So they've got part of the clitoris, which is inside the body rather than the little knob you see on the outside. It is very close to the surface of in the anterior wall of the vagina. And so it's stimulated during intercourse and they have orgasms more easily because of that, or because their clitoris is rubbing against the man's pelvis or part of his penis or something like that, or because there is direct clitoral stimulation being applied. That's why people orgasm. So a lot of people will say that they are orgasming during intercourse when they're actually not, and it's not just, or it's not just intercourse alone that's causing it. But you would believe it was, because whenever you see women in films or couples, heterosexual straight couples in films, they go into a lift, they look around, they do it, and they both come simultaneously, and the woman looks absolutely overwhelmed with passion with no foreplay, just sticks it in, wow, they come. That's it. But that doesn't happen in real life, but it gives the impression that that's the way women should have orgasms through. And it makes people think there's something wrong with them if they don't.
And it works both ways. I think young women think they should have orgasms that way. And also young men think that young women should have orgasms that way. And so they don't, you know, try anything different or that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think a lot of I often hear about men saying, oh, my partner only comes that way. Well, quite often that partner's faking. And quite often people will go on and on and on trying, you know, a guy will try not to climax and keep on pumping away. And, you know, they're both getting sore and tired and wishing it was over. But because there's this belief that you should be able to.
So why can't women, or why don't women orgasm at all? And not just in terms of, because I'm sure there's some women as well. It's not just, they do stimulate the clitoris, all that sort of thing, but they still don't orgasm. So I guess that might be two separate questions. Why can't, or why don't?
Yeah, well, that it is in a way. And in the film that we watched, there was a 55-year-old, I think, Mark Kermode said she was supposed to be a woman, played by Emma Thompson, who had been unable to orgasm throughout her life, either through masturbation, through intercourse, or any other means. She had never climaxed. And we saw her as a very uptight kind of a person, so who potentially found it hard to let go and possibly thought of sex as a bit grubby, or certainly not very pleasant from what she said. And so she had hired a sex worker to hopefully unlock something. But she wasn't just concerned about orgasm. She was concerned about having sexual experiences that other people did. She felt unfulfilled as a woman because she hadn't experienced things like oral sex. So it was more than just the orgasm for her. So she wasn't a victim of the orgasm gap. She was just a victim of no orgasm, if you like, and potentially because of not having ever received proper stimulation, being poor sex education, probably feeling masturbation was a bit grubby and not doing that. So not knowing her own body well enough and not having a sympathetic, good lover.
Yeah. I mean, and I think her experience for, you know, might well translate for some people, but probably not all people who have this. So that's her reasons why. But are there women who literally can't orgasm? Is it possible?
Oh, well, for physical reasons.
Yeah, as well. Not just the societal ones we're talking about, you know, the stigma placed on women's sexuality, those sorts of things, or like having a bad partner, those sorts of, like, I guess, nurture, maybe more nature. Is it for some people, is it impossible?
No. Even people who've had spinal cord injuries can relearn orgasm. That it might be difficult, but they can. I won't go into loads of details, but direct vagus nerve stimulation can bring about orgasm. Memories of orgasm can bring about orgasm.
So when you say direct vagus, that sounds like some sort of gambling thing, or maybe direct.
Oh yeah,
or is it like? I'm imagining, you know, two people in a lab connecting you with clippers and you're electrocuting you with a big orgasm. Like, what is that actually? Is that?
It's a big long nerve that runs down the center of the body, and it's a nerve that connects with the clitoris. So you can stimulate, say, the cervix and create an orgasm that way. There is a highly erogenous area there that a lot of people don't know. Be careful if you're trying this. And maybe don't. But things like that work. Also, you know, at the site, I think we've discussed this before, at the site of a spinal fracture, the area around it becomes very sensitive. So if you stimulate the site of the fracture, so the skin above it, you can often achieve orgasm that way. So everybody has the potential to orgasm.
I've heard about someone who, was in a wheelchair, and so they couldn't feel anything from about the shoulders down, and they would orgasm through their ear being played with.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard of all sorts of things, noses, you name it. It's really, really unusual.
Head, shoulders, knees and toes.
Knees and toes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody can do it.
Is it inherently easier for men to orgasm?
Yes.
Yes. And so is that part of the reason why there's this orgasm gap?
I suppose in theory, it's easier, but lots and lots of women can orgasm really, really quickly, given the right stimulation and the right frame, you know, and being relaxed and all of that stuff. Just being in the frame of mind where you're interested in sex. So, women can orgasm within seconds of starting stimulation. So, and they can have multiple orgasms during sex sometimes, but there's no requirement to do so. And it isn't a fail if you don't, you know, nothing like that. And we're all different and our bodies are all different. But I want to say it's easier for men because it's quite easy to stimulate the penis with a vagina or with a hand. It's a bit, sometimes it's more difficult to stimulate the clitoris because if the external clitoris is small and that's what you're going for, then maybe it's possible that it's more difficult to stimulate simply because there isn't so much of it outside the body. But there are, the clitoris, as I say, is internal. With experimentation, you can find it's not just that little bit on the outside. People with a larger clitoris on the outside may find orgasm during intercourse easier because it's easier to make that, friction contact. So theoretically, it shouldn't be more difficult for women. And it probably isn't in lots of relationships or for lots of women. They may say it's really not difficult at all and they may climax very quickly with no trouble. But for some women, it is going to be harder. And yes, there are all sorts of beliefs about masturbation being wrong, experimentation being wrong, anything other than intercourse being wrong. Some people do believe that. Some men believe that as well as some women, and it can certainly inhibit their sexual expression. There's no doubt about it. But equally, there's no reason why with experimentation and relaxation, you shouldn't be able to get there.
And is this something that people come to you for? Do people ever see you and go, hey, hello, Kate, sex therapist. I can't orgasm. I really want to. What do you prescribe?
Yes,
and
all the time.
And is that the sort of, that's what you do? You do experiments with them, obviously, for them to themselves.
I don't do experiments with them.
Again, in your lab, you're like putting them up. But no. So you give them experiments to do themselves or with their partner.
Yeah.
And focusing on that relaxation, focusing on those sorts of things that they enjoy. And hopefully that way they can do it. Would you say that lately there's, this new boom of like sex positivity, and I think the younger generation, funnily enough, in like programs like sex education stuff, there is a shift towards more women wanting orgasms and wanting to close this gap. Do you think the gap is closing, and how do we close the gap?
No, I think the gap is widening.
Interesting.
I think that's pretty sure. And a lot of that is due to various kinds of media because you are seeing people on TV, women getting off on intercourse. It's so, so penis and vagina focused. And it's interesting. Every survey that's done finds that lesbians have more orgasms than women in straight relationships because they are obviously understand one another's bodies a lot better. And you know, and a lot of men feel that they've failed if they don't provide orgasm through thrusting. And many don't understand what a clitoris is, where it is, what to do with it. And a lot of people like to get straight on with intercourse or think that's the right thing to do. And there are an awful lot of people who approach sex at times when partners aren't really interested, and so they try to get it over more quickly. So there's less time for experimentation as well. No doubt about it that a lot of people are getting their sex education through porn, which isn't a realistic portrayal of most people's sexual experience. That's not helping. That is definitely not helping.
And again, there's a lot of orgasming through penis and vagina sex in there as well. And
that, you know, precisely. And other funny things that, you know, that don't happen, that a lot of people don't really like, but they do like in porn. Because you have to remember that porn is fantasy sex. This is not, this is not supposed to be seen as real life sex. There's, you know, we've heard guests on this program saying, you know, people can tell the difference, but I sometimes wonder if they can tell the difference. Because if you don't see, you know, what you see on a movie or TV, if you believe that that is real life sex, then why wouldn't you believe porn is typical of real life, you know, most people's sexual experience? Interestingly, the sex worker in the movie that we watched seems such a fantasy figure. I don't have experience as male sex workers myself personally, but I don't imagine there are many that are like this guy. You know, who was like a therapist.
Yeah, he was a therapist. He was so calm. He was also unbelievably attractive.
Good looking.
So good looking.
So fit.
So fit. Ooh. And so he's really good looking. He's really fit. But also, like you say, he speaks like a therapist. He's ridiculously calm. Even when Emma Thompson tells him to leave, you know, he just asks her questions. Like, even sometimes when, you know, she wants to just rush the sex stuff, he's sort of like, hey, let's chill a bit. You know, let's try. After a while, he's not even talking about the sex stuff. He's just trying to work her through other things. That is unfeasible scenario, you'd imagine. But you're right. It's interesting that we're talking about fantasy, and he seemed like such fantasy himself.
I did think at some point it was going to be revealed that the whole thing was her sexual fantasy, because I think if you had a fantasy about sex with a sex worker, then they would probably be the perfect man. You know, they probably would be kind and caring and therapeutic and all of that, and understanding, and overcome all your worries and concerns and that sort of thing, if it was in your fantasy. So I thought, oh, she's going to wake up in a minute and this will have been a dream, or her, or we're going to see a big smile on her face as she climaxes to this fantasy.
Yeah. And in some ways, I think that would have been more profound than the truth of the film, which is he's real. He exists.
Yeah.
And he's just a really tip-top, shit-hot sex worker who must get paid a lot because he's so good.
Yeah. And of course, in sexual surrogacy, where a person was used to teach people how to have sex, is a thing. In the UK, sexual surrogacy is illegal.
What's this, the act of teaching someone to have sex with someone else?
So you have someone stands in as a partner. In. So right. they so that you learn how you either learn how to have sex yourself, or you learn how to have orgasms, or you but through
is that this, not just sex work?
Well, it is in the UK. That is sex work. Yeah.
And is that illegal in the UK?
And it's illegal. So if you were a sexual surrogate here, you would be called a sex worker, and sex therapists are not sexual. Please know that sex therapists are not sex workers. Except in the as much as we work with sex, but we don't do it. So it's very different. But in the past, this has been done. And Masters and Johnson, who sort of invented sex therapy and did all the original sex therapy research, would have sex in the lab themselves to check things out. And there are certainly in many places people who exclusively work with people who have things like spinal cord injuries or some sort of challenged ability, so that they would work with them. So generally speaking, that would be specialist sex workers in the UK. So and seen as sex workers rather than sex therapists, although, you know, it could be argued that this is a form of sex therapy.
And I've heard of sex workers working with people with disabilities, and I've heard of actually their primary carers also sometimes helping helping them to have sex with other disabled people or their partners and things like that. Mm. And is that's not illegal though? Because I feel like that's all, I've read about that a lot and it all seems above board and there's websites and stuff.
Yeah, booking for someone else is in theory, yeah.
Right.
It's illegal.
So, one thing that this film did teach us is it's quite pro pleasure and stuff like that. Whether, you know, however it goes about it. And I suppose this film, the message of it would be, you know, pleasure's a great thing. If you can, you know, relieve yourself, if you can get rid of the demons in your head and let yourself go and enjoy yourself, you should. And yeah, just interestingly, in the case of disabled people who, you know, they could do that all in their mind, but maybe they can't physically with their body. It's a bit of a shame if they can't get someone to help them. It's literally illegal for someone to help them. But
well, there are also sex toys specifically for people with challenged abilities. I mean, you know, you've got all kinds of things which are like vibrators that are easy to switch on and things like that. If you've got difficulty holding something, real consideration has been given to this, so which is brilliant.
Mm.
But anyway, Emma Thompson didn't have that sort of issue. She just booked the... I'm sorry, I get all literal with films and I sit there thinking, where did she find this guy?
Mm.
Well, how did she book him? How did she know about this? What made her think, oh, I'll go and book an escort? I mean, presumably escort agency, is it something like that? You know, how did she do it? So I wanted to know those things about her. But we got a whole load of backstory from both of them, which became the kind of focus of the film.
And in fact, I mean, you made a really good point on the drive home that the film, we went into it thinking it would be about orgasms and the orgasm gap, which did play a part, but actually it was more about consent and boundaries. And to be fair, within that, I think the film was actually quite a good look at consent and boundaries. There was some good consent on display and some bad examples of boundaries and being broken, etc. But
lots of boundary violation,
but to show us how it's not supposed to be done.
She was incredibly unbounded, given you know the difficulty with sex. Incredible that she overstepped massively, seemingly, with everybody. You know, just if she had an opinion, you had to
know it.
Interestingly, she wasn't a particularly sympathetic character for that reason. I mean, she was, and I felt like, oh, if we're promoting female empowerment and female orgasm and all of that, then why do we have to have such a flawed character? I mean, people should be allowed to be real, and we should absolutely be seeing flawed characters. And if we have a heroine, they don't have to be amazing, wonderful, sympathetic people. But it was almost like she was being punished. You know, there you are. She's a bit of a bitch. Look what she gets for it, you know. And that annoyed me.
I'm glad you used the B word and I didn't there, because I was thinking, you know, she's an uptight bitch. And that's horrible. That sounds terrible. And I shouldn't be able to, I shouldn't say that, but that's how she's portrayed. And that's what you're trying to say.
That sounded so much worse coming from you.
I know, it's because I'm a man. I'm so sorry. But that's the way she's presented. And I totally understand your point. You kind of wish that we could see a character who's embracing their sexuality, he wasn't coming from that angle. But also, I wonder if she wasn't so annoying and horrible, we might then end up sexualizing her anyway. Like, women are always sexualized on screen. You know, if she was really fun, great character, we'd just be like, oh, well, of course she's opening up herself up to sexy sexuality stuff.
And there wouldn't be any story.
And we go, how? And we'd probably think she's quite hot. And, you know, all that sort of stuff. And again, we'd sexualize her again, like every other woman on screen. So,
yeah. So from that point of view, it was a helpful technique. It's just another woman like that. Having said that,
God, I can't believe I called her a bitch. I'm so sorry.
Wasn't it great that she, spoiler alert, that she was naked at one point?
Emma Thompson, yeah, got naked. And that was a great scene. That was a great moment, because a lot of the film, obviously, she's fretting about her age and how she looks and stuff like that. And I thought that was a really powerful moment. So that was really, really good.
And there she was looking at herself and, you know, seeming to appreciate what she got, her body. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, again, film ends with her smiling at her body, which she couldn't do before. Mm. And so ultimately, she's come a long way and it's great.
Yeah.
All right, brilliant. Well, we've bridged the orgasm gap, I think, with that one. What a fun outing that was for us. Our first school trip. Please send us in where you would like us to go on our next school trip. If there's any sexy stuff you guys know about that we could go to, that'd be great. You can send them in to us on Instagram or Twitter. We're at RealSexEdPod, or email us in podcast@hatchet.com. You can also send in any questions or queries you have related to sex, relationships, and intimacy, and Kate will answer them on the podcast. And that's what we're doing in part two of the podcast right after this.
It's the mailbag. Send Kate your queries to podcast@hatchet.com. It's the mailbag. Send Kate your queries, podcast@hatchet.com.
Hello there. I have a query for Kate. I would like to know when the Real Sex Education mailbag starts.
The Real Sex Education mailbag starts right now.
Thank you.
Right, Mum, it's that time where we open up our mailbox and I put some sex and relationship questions to you and our lovely listeners. If you have a question for Kate, you can email it into podcast@hatchet.com or DM us on Twitter and Instagram @RealSexEdPod. And whilst you're there, why don't you give us a follow? We post cute pics and stuff. It's very cool. All right, first question comes from Marina, and Marina says, I'm 67 and haven't had sex since I was 50. I had a hysterectomy and my husband was scared to touch me after that. So sex just tailed off. The other day, I said to him that our New Year resolution should be to have sex again, and he just said that he thought that was all behind us now. He seemed really embarrassed and didn't want to talk about it. Is it really too late for us? My husband is 66.
No, of course it's not. No, I think jumping from no sex at all into intercourse is asking quite a lot. And he was probably taken quite by surprise and was probably thinking, ooh, I'd quite like to have a think about this. This is a bit, you know, this is a bit much all of a sudden. But they could take it more slowly. I mean, they could have a chat about what they want to do rather than what they don't do. So start really slow with holding hands, cuddling up on the sofa, just giving one another a back rub or something like that, having a bath together. Yeah, I'm always going on about baths.
Yeah. Well, we know what you're into.
And then just building things up gradually. And I think, obviously, I'm going to say, ideally, see a sex therapist because they will definitely help you through this process. But it probably needs a bit more of a conversation, doesn't it, before they're able to just get into it. I think it's a shame that people do this thing so often of having one conversation that takes someone else by surprise. And you forget, you've been thinking about this and building up to it for a long time. And the partner doesn't know it's coming and is really shocked and has to regroup and think about what they want. And it might be that he comes back and says, you know what, that really is behind me. And then that's a different conversation, which again could be helped by therapy, about what he might want. I mean, you know, they might want to open up in some way. They might, they might be interested in cuckolding, but not necessarily. So it certainly is not too late is the answer.
And just for my own thing, what is a hysterectomy?
Oh, it's having the womb removed.
Right. And so that's quite a big procedure,
I imagine. It's major. It's big
so
surgery. And so when the womb is removed, they also remove the top sort of part of the vagina as well. So you don't go back to have it. And you've obviously got an abdominal wound, so you're not going to get back into intercourse straight away. And I guess from whenever you stop, it's quite easy to stay stopped. And people are quite often scared of hurting their partners.
So that's another thing, I guess, to remind your husband is be like, no, I feel good now. You're not going to hurt me.
But you know, if you treat it as experimental rather than thinking, okay, if we have a go and it doesn't work, then that's it. It's over. Of course it's not. There's all sorts of things you can do and all sorts of help you can get. And it's difficult because sometimes it can be painful to have intercourse if you're older and you haven't had it for a long time. So that's something to maybe think about as well. Think in terms of investigating lubrication and that sort of thing. But sex, as I'm always saying, is not all about intercourse. And build up gradually if that's where you want to end up. But there are so many other lovely things you could be doing too.
All right. Wonderful. Well, the next question is from Anonymous, who says, I really get turned on by hair. It's not really pubic hair, but long flowing hair. I also like long chest hair. I identify as pansexual, but I'm only attracted to boys with long hair. I have a long-term girlfriend, nearly 2 years, who doesn't know about this. She just had her hair cut. which was a shock. Mm. I don't feel as attracted to her now, which has really upset her. She knows I don't like her hair this way, although not why, and thinks I'm being controlling. I thought about asking her to wear a wig, but I'm not sure what she'll think. Wow. Yeah,
don't ask her to wear a wig.
No.
Hmm.
No.
Well, I don't know. Maybe she'd go along with that. But, yeah, wow, it's a fetish, isn't it? So I think you have to come clean with this, don't you?
Yeah, maybe. It's going to be a difficult conversation, though, just come out and be like, by the way, I know we've been dating for 2 years, but, and it sounds like a fetish. It sounds like this is what this person needs to get off, not just a kink where it's like, oh, we can do this every now and then. It feels like a full-on fetish where this is what I need to get turned on. And I think if my partner turned around 2 years and was like, oh, by the way, you know, there's this big fetish I have and you had no idea about, that might freak me out. But then again, maybe, and especially as I've just cut my hair really short.
Yeah, yeah. Some warning would have been helpful, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So, but this is tough. I mean, you know, we have to deal with the situation we're in right now, and this is the situation we're in. So you think come clean.
The problem here is if she didn't know about the fetish and he says, I don't fancy you with short hair, she's going to be thinking, well, what about me? What about the me you love? Why doesn't the me you love turn you on? And if you have a particular fetish where that is the only way you can get turned on, then she, I guess, needs to know about that. Because the way it's framed is, don't fancy her anymore.
Yeah,
if that's what's coming across, she's going to be really upset because it's a reasonably long relationship where I guess she'd be expecting him to be quite into her mind and their friendship and all of that rather than just her hair.
Yeah. But is there a way of phrasing it being like, listen, I love you and I want to keep having sex with you. It's just, I really do like the long hair thing. You know, is that something we can... Oh, God. Then they might be like, well, I can wear a wig. I mean, that's just... It's just not... Yeah. I think it's a really sticky situation
here. I think
here,
we don't know enough. I mean, I think we don't... I mean, if he's really sort of turned off, then it's going to be really obvious, isn't it? But otherwise, I mean, he's going to have to say, you know, I didn't mention it, but I'm really into long hair and it's just thrown me a bit, maybe he could say, and then see how it goes.
But then I would respond and be like, oh, you don't like my hair.
Well, the other thing here is if he hasn't told her about the fetish, we have to start saying, why is he ashamed of it? Why couldn't he have been up front right from the beginning? And because, you know, really, it's not hurting anybody to be into hair. Why not just be open about it and say, you know what, I'm really, really into hair. It's a real thing for me. I mean, why not be open about it? I mean, I think the problem here is that he's kept it a secret and now he's got to explain. So I guess he's got to explain.
Yeah.
And let that be a lesson not to hide things.
Yeah, but then you got to choose your moment still, because that then asks, like, when do you tell people these things? And I guess, like, if you meet someone on the first date and you're like, by the way, I literally need long hair to get off, people might be a little bit, at first, be like, whoa. But, you know, that's why it's a tough one.
But, I mean, people have this with all kinds of things, like when they start dating. When do you tell people all sorts of things, like, I've been married before, I've got a child, I've, you know... I don't know, you know, I have
I've
a health
issue. Health
issue.
Yeah, exactly.
Anything.
Yeah.
It is a thing that lots of people have to go through, and you do have to choose your moment. This is not more unusual than that, really.
Can we role play the conversation? Because I just don't know how they're going to do it. I will play the role of short hair girlfriend, and you can tell me how you're going to start this conversation.
I want to be the girlfriend.
But to be honest, I don't know. But this is what I'm trying to say. I don't know how to do this. How do you have this conversation? That's what I want you to tell me.
Well, I guess...
Get into character.
I'm not the best person with this. I've got short hair.
No, I know. But you're the one who is giving this advice. So how do they start the conversation? I'll kick us off. Hey, babe, what do you think of my new hair?
I hate it.
Why do you hate it?
I'm sorry, I was just taken by surprise. I've never mentioned it before, but I'm really into long hair. It's just, I'm just a bit of a shock.
Oh, right. So you don't like it then?
Maybe I'll get used to it.
Okay, well, that's lying, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is what I mean.
It's really difficult.
It's so hard. It's so hard. But I think that's the best course of action. That's the way to do it. And be honest and say, I should have been more honest with you before.
Mm.
And say, I really, really like you. I want to keep going out with you. But this is just the truth. I really liked your long hair before. And maybe just keep stressing, you know, I really liked your long hair before.
I mean, the proof of the pudding is going to be how they get on subsequently, isn't it? And whether they are still able to have sex, whether they're still able to be friends, whether they just ride it out until it grows, or she might not want to ever grow it again. But
Yeah.
I mean, we'll have to see. Do you think we've cracked it for them?
I think so. I think basically the best way to, just because I was worried, I was like, how do you start the conversation? And I think if you say, listen, I should have mentioned this before, because you can only be honest, and then how you work it out as a couple will go from there. All right, tough ones today, but that's it. Thank you so much for your questions. As I say, if you want yours answered, please get in touch, podcast@hatchet.com, or DM us at Real Sex Ed Pod. You'll find us on Twitter and Instagram. Mum, thank you very much for your sexpertise.
Oh, thank you for a lovely show.
Thank you.
And I like your hair.
Oh, great. There we go. Steady. Thank you at home for listening. We'll see you next time for some more real sex education. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Real Sex Education, which is hosted by Diggory Waite and Kate Campbell. The show is produced by Diggory Waite, and the executive producer is Claire Broughton. The Real Sex Education is a Hattrick podcast.
This podcast is based on the real-life relationship between Diggory Waite and his mother, accredited sex therapist Kate Campbell. The show is therefore inspired by, but otherwise unrelated to, the TV show Sex Education. But yes, Diggory does wish his mother was played by Gillian Anderson.